This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is Kurt Blades with the Association of Equipment Manufacturers. Kurt joins us in just a moment. Jenny Moffitt is Undersecretary, Marketing and Regulatory Programs for USDA, opening the Farmers Market.
The 25th season of the USDA Farmers Market. We are back and we are ready to go after a two-year hiatus. This market started in 1995 as a living demonstration of USDA's commitment to local and regional food systems. DC has many farmers markets that are supporting local and regional food economies and providing important access to nutritious food right here at farmers markets. In fact, there are over 8,000 farmers markets across the country that are doing this. These markets are allowing producers to be in their communities, to provide options for consumers, and to experience the local and regional food varieties that we all really, really enjoy.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Kurt Blades. Kurt is Senior Vice President, Industry Sectors and Product Leadership at the Association of Equipment Manufacturers. And I haven't quite done all my number counting on my fingers here, but that's a lot of syllables. Kurt, welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks for having me on. And frankly, my title is just Kurt. You know, I certainly works with AEM. That's a better way to say it, Tony.
Well, speaking of AEM, the Association of Equipment Manufacturers, will tell you a little more about AEM in just a moment. But one of the things that AEM does on a monthly basis is look at ag tractor and combine unit sales. And it's a way for us to compare month to month, year to year, and kind of get a trend on where we're going. And based upon the April numbers, where are we going or where are we now?
Yeah, that's fair. As you correctly said, the Association of Equipment Manufacturers, really for the last 30 plus years, have each month we release the tractor and combine report, where we kind of track the classes of sales of tractors and combines. And it gives a pretty good barometer of the overall ag economy, sort of some attitudes out there in the field. When we look at the month of April for 2022, I do have to put a big old asterisk on that, because as you know, there are major supply chain challenges across the board, whether it's pickup trucks, tractors, pinball machines, or fertilizer. We're impacted by that. And so our numbers have a little bit of an asterisk beside them, because although they're solid, they are showing a little bit of a reduction from the previous years.
And as we really dig a little deeper into here, some of these, it might make sense, because as I recall our conversations during the height of the pandemic and the nation was shut down, we were seeing these smaller tractors, the utility tractors, basically flying off the lots. And so it might make sense that sales of that class has slowed down a bit.
Absolutely correct. So if we look at, you know, we break this out at, let's look at under 40 horsepower tractors. Under 40 horsepower tractors would be, you know, kind of those subcompactor tractors. Those are really not farm tractors. They're going to be more on an acreage. And, you know, we saw a decline of, 60% year to date on that particular class of tractors. However, we're going off of absolute just astonishing numbers this time last year. So to compare 16% down over a record number, we're still in pretty good territory with that tractor class. 40 to 100 horsepower tractors, we're down 11% for the year to date. Again, also, we were at some pretty high numbers previously that we were comparing against. A bright spot on this month's report is that 100 plus horsepower tractors are actually up about 10%. Those are true row crop tractors. I mean, those are the ones that farmers are using for actually getting in the field, true farm tractors. We did see a little bit of a decline in articulated four-wheel drive tractors. Percentage-wise, we were off about 8% for the year-to-date, but that doesn't represent a huge numbers. And then finally, combines are down about 14%. But again, compared to this time last year where we were selling a ton of combines, these are all numbers that I would say would be within expectations, given all the things that are out there in farm country today.
Yeah, and, you know, you start talking about, you know, how many units that really means. It might surprise some to know that we sell over 400 units in a month. of combines. That there's quite a few going off the lots, right?
Absolutely, 450 tractors basically are sold in April 2022, and that represents about 1,200 combines to date. Tony, you say this correctly. Combines are you don't wake up tomorrow and decide to buy a combine. You have to think about that. That's got to fit into your business operation. So that just kind of gives you a pretty good indication of the scale of farming in the Midwest and in the United States, but also kind of talk about how serious farmers are about taking advantage of some of this technology. So these are, although you could say small numbers with, 450, but you could also say that 450 times the price of a new combine, that represents a pretty sizable number of sales.
You mentioned earlier the supply chain disruptions that we've experienced. Obviously, Washington, D.C. knows about those supply chain disruptions, but maybe what they don't know is the inner workings of today's equipment, whether we're talking about a tractor or a combine or other pieces of equipment. How important is it to help those within the belt? How important is it to help them understand more about what farmers and ranchers do?
Well, I'll tell you what we find. As you know, there's a lot of arrows pointing at the ag industry right now, whether it's an environmental group or consumer advocacy group or whoever it might be. So we think it's really important to tell ag story and to tell modern ag story. I hear a lot of, I don't know who I can attribute this to, but someone has, I've heard say once that if you haven't been on a farm in 10 years, you really haven't been on a farm because the technology is changing that fast. So one of the things that we take very seriously at AEM is that communication and educating the beltway, educating those policymakers and regulators of what's going on the production side, what's going on the technology side that really is allowing farmers to produce more with less, and have a much smaller environmental footprint, and really maximize their output with just by adopting some pretty cool new technology. We've done that in a lot of different ways. In fact, most recently in March we had what we called the Celebration of Modern Agriculture on the National Mall, where we had a couple of dozens of major pieces of equipment right there on the National Mall, where we invited senators and policymakers and regulators from EPA and USDA and OSHA, all to kind of walk around and see the equipment firsthand and get a feel for the scale, but also get a sense for what manufacturers are doing to solve the challenge of sustainability while producing more with less.
And it really provides a springboard, if you will, for this next topic. And I know there's no way we can get into this and really cover it in the next 5 minutes, but I do want to at least make a splash in the pool. Future of food production. What is that?
Well, so AEM, kind of in our mission for the last few years, we've been releasing really good kind of industry position papers that really kind of is a gift to the entire ag industry to help spur some conversation. And building on that tradition, during the pandemic, we started putting together a group of about 20 different executives and futurists within our member companies and representing agriculture. Well, we tried to build out some scenarios of what the future is going to look like in the next 10 to 15 years, not looking out very far, and created some scenarios that really are going to help AEM to drive its services, but also to help inform our members as they look into markets that they want to serve to best make sure that we are responding to the needs that the customers have out there. And the third benefit of that is we make this available to the public for just to spur those conversations, whether it's with a policymaker or just the general public. People love to talk about the future, and when you can put tangible pieces of information out there of where food is going to come from or what's happening on the innovation space within agriculture, it's a really fun conversation that allows us to move from what has historically been a defensive posture when we move to policymakers saying, hey, we're on the offense, we're doing some really fun things, come join us and make it easier for us to feed the world in a more sustainable way.
Hey, Kurt, you mentioned earlier, if you haven't been on a farm in the last 10 years, you really haven't been on a farm. So, and again, there are 13 pieces to this study, but is there one that kind of jumps out at you as really being one that caught your attention?
Well, I'll tell you, the 13 pieces all sort of work together really to solve what I would consider to be our biggest challenges facing society. And it's not just facing agriculture, facing society. First among those being workforce challenges. We all know that, finding good help in agriculture is a little bit difficult. So one of the trends really addresses that. A second trend is talking about the convergence of innovation and how innovation, whether it's artificial intelligence or wireless connectivity or battery technology or go through the list. It's all coming together at the same time in a really unique manner that allows us to do things that we would have never dreamed of doing before. And then the final thing is, what we've talked about a little bit is, the need to address sustainability concerns or the bigger societal concerns. So all 13 of these trends really focus in on solving those three challenges. And whether it is, trend number one, which is produce more with less environmental impact, or number two, optimize for water use. And you can't open up a newspaper today or turn on the television without hearing concerns about water or concerns about environmental impact. So, knowing that we as an industry in agriculture and we specifically as equipment manufacturers are taking that to heart, that matters a lot when having a conversation with the policymaker. That matters a lot when having a conversation with the EPA. They can trust that we are on the problem and we're going to solve it with innovation.
So, Kurt, a lot of information, and we've covered a lot of ground here. If we want to find out more about that or what the Association of Equipment Manufacturers does, can we do that online?
The best way to learn about AEM is Association of Equipment Manufacturers is to go to AEM.org. The other way to learn is to get engaged in some of our trade shows. I know a lot of your members are looking at their calendars for the next year, and we'll be at Commodity Classic next March. Make plans to attend that, or if you're so inclined, attend ConExpo in March or Utility Expo in October of 23. That's where you learn a lot about what AEM is doing, and we invite all people to come join us in these conversations.
Kurt Blades is Senior Vice President, Industry Sectors and Product Leadership with the Association of Equipment Manufacturers. Again, online, AEM.org. It's the Agribusiness Report.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
Only AGCO Genuine Parts have the precise fit, reliability, and quality to keep your equipment operating at peak performance. Livingston Machinery has the best factory-trained technicians as well as industry-leading parts available. No one knows your equipment better than our team of skilled techs. We're available 24/7 for non-stop productivity all year round. We don't compromise on quality or performance, and neither should you. Learn more at LivingstonMachinery.com and to find a location near you. Livingston Machinery, 24/7 service for your 24/7 operation.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Special guest, Kurt Blades with the Association of Equipment Manufacturers.
When it comes to farming cotton in West Texas, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers rely on Delta Pine brand cotton. Bred, tested, and made in West Texas for West Texas growing conditions. Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with strong cotton from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Cotton growers, take out yield-robbing nematodes with an in-furrow application of Averland FC from Vive Crop Protection. A cost-effective solution, Averland FC fights early-season nematodes for healthier seedlings and stronger plant stands. Averland FC is the only abamectin product registered in-furrow for nematodes in cotton, and it's compatible with other crop inputs. To learn more, talk to your retailer or visit vivecrop.com. Averland FC is a restricted-use product. Read and follow label instructions.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Keep up with the Association of Equipment Manufacturers online, AEM.org.
Why sorghum?
I think sorghum is a smart choice for growers because it just fits well with our limited moisture. There's a lot of improvement the last few years. It's just been a really good crop for us. It just works.
Sorghum has the ability over many crops to sit and wait on moisture, so it's a smart choice there.
Sorghum is a smart choice because it is flexible and tough. It's a good crop.
Rain or shine, sorghum is the smart choice.
At Golden Harvest, our best skill is knowing how to listen. From our Gold Series soybean and game-changing corn portfolios to our expert insights housed in the Illuminate digital agronomy platform, everything we offer is an answer to what we've heard from you. This is how we listen.
Copyright 2021 Syngenta. The trademarks or service marks used herein are the property of a Syngenta Group company. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Jim Wallman is a meteorologist with the National Interagency Fire Center on the August Wildfire Outlook.
By August, which is normally one of the peak months for much of the West, especially the Northwest, the Northern Rockies, and much of the Great Basin, we're expecting above normal potential continuing over much of the plains. And with a drier than normal signal in much of the plains, we're actually expecting above normal potential to extend into the western upper and mid-Mississippi Valley, which will include portions of southwest Minnesota through western Iowa and western Missouri. Then as we head west, above normal potential will extend into the west to the Wyoming mountains, into the Grand Tetons, and then through central Idaho, and then above normal potential will continue through August across Northern California, and then extend into much of Oregon and eastern Washington as well.